move to the next case of the morning, which is Wenzer Zarin versus Alberto Gonzalez. Mr. Cicini.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I represent Mr. Abu Zera. We are requesting relief pursuant to the Withholding of Removal and Convention Against Torture Treaty, principally for Mr. Abu Zari's apostasy from Islam to Christianity. And as you know, the immigration court and the BIA found, well, the immigration court, the judge found him credible with respect to his conversion from Islam to Christianity. And so the issue here basically is it more likely than not that if Mr. Abu Zari is removed to his home country, whether or not he would be either persecuted or tortured pursuant to the CAT? And we submit.
Mr. Cicini, this is in some sense a question about the state of the record. Maybe in some sense it goes a bit beyond that. The immigration judge looked at the State Department report and came to the conclusion that people like Mr. Abu Zara, who had converted, would not necessarily be persecuted, that there, in fact, is a variety of consequences, and maybe some country that very strictly follows Sharia might call for the death penalty for an apostate, but that in the occupied West Bank, anyway, that does not seem to be the case.
I would disagree, and I would point to that, I believe, his report, the judge's report, on the record, page 294, where the Department of State report states that Sharia laws are the main source of legislation in Palestine. And this is true throughout the Middle East countries as well.
There are differences. I mean, if you look, you know, say at the draft Palestinian constitution, they do say the principles of Islamic Sharia are a major source for legislation, but they also say that people will have freedom of religion, even though Islam is the state religion. So where's the evidence that and of course there's a little confusion in this record about where he's being sent back to, Jordan versus the occupied West Bank, and I want to find out what you can tell me on that. But assuming it's the occupied West Bank, where's the evidence that the penalty is death for apostates?
Well, under Sharia laws, the penalty is death, and this court in Bastianpour, I believe, acknowledged that.
Bastianpour, yeah.
And when it's basically stated that, I believe this court found that apostasy from Islam is a capital offense under Sharia.
But what if the occupied West Bank isn't following Sharia as strictly as that? Well, I mean, there is evidence that not every place does.
But there's evidence in Palestine that Sharia laws are the main source of legislation in Palestine. And
that's
if you take into consider as well the current situation, obviously it's different than it was in 2001 or 2 whenever this hearing occurred. We have Hamas now that is a powerful political party in that region. It was an influence before they took power, especially in Hebron in the West Bank. And it's been characterized by many experts as a fanatical Islamic group, even a terrorist group. So I would submit, Your Honor, that I think there's substantial evidence that the Sharia laws would be followed.
So where does the immigration judge go wrong? We obviously have a very deferential standard of review. The immigration judge looks at materials about the treatment of converts, doesn't come to the same conclusion you're urging he should have come to. Was this just a lack of his paying attention to information on the other side, or was that he just wasn't persuaded? What did he do that is something this court would have any legitimacy in turning over?
I think he dismissed the documents that we submitted as well. On page 297 of the same report, I'm quoting, there was an incident, this is a Department of State report, Christian cleric dissuades a member of converts because fear of being ostracized by family or subjected to violence. I think, and then we also submitted some reports from Christian News World and other personal reports of individuals being either persecuted or even put to death because of their apostasy from Islam. The issue is not whether or not a Christian can live in Palestine. I think the judge made an issue, well, there are Christians living in Palestine along with Muslims, but those are individuals that were born as Christians.
Sure,
here we have
someone
who...
There's a difference between converts.
There's a complete difference. And I think the immigration court subjectively just dismissed some of our reports because it wasn't... Those reports didn't come from Amnesty International or maybe Human Rights Watch, and but there was no other evidence to, you know, to refute that type of evidence.
How does this case shake out in the big picture? Let's say that you win here a reversal and finding that you are entitled to withholding of removal. And 5 years from now, Hamas is loses power, and the more moderate government takes control of the West Bank and Palestinian territories and so on. What happens then?
Potentially, Judge, he could be sent back to.
But what are you entitled to? Are you entitled to another hearing in that? Or I would assume you are. They don't automatically. No one automatically would.
I would think you would have another hearing. I've never had a case like that.
Withholding, as I understand, and you're the expert here. Withholding only means a temporary stay here and pending changes of conditions in the country of origin.
That's correct. That's correct.
Well, also looking at it more globally, what happens if your client wins? Does that mean every apostate has the per se ability to get asylum?
Judge, I can't answer that, but I think if they can show that the particular country or their homeland is following the laws of Sharia, where apostasy, you can be placed to death, I think they would have a pretty good case, yes. Well, whether or not every single person would...
I know lots of folks would like to get out of their places for reasons other than just that, but they may find... cause to convert in order to get an exit visa.
Well, that's true, and I think the immigration court made a good point in his heart of hearts. He doesn't know if Mr. Abu Zahr, if he was returned, would continue to practice Christianity. I guess no one knows that answer. But this is an individual, if you, some of the documents that were enclosed, he did marry a U.S. citizen, and she is a very strong Christian. With respect to Mr. Abu Zahr, I would.
I'm not questioning his conversion. It's just that there other people. I don't even know how it works, but how you're not able to convert, and I know that there's some pressure to force people to convert to Islam, or else.
Which his family is trying to have him reconvert right now.
It's a rough place to live, obviously. Well, I digress. Go ahead.
I think we have a decision by the immigration court where found one part of his testimony credible, that his conversion was credible. And you take that into consideration of his background. I won't go into the whole thing, but he comes from a very conservative Islamic family. And the region he's from, I think it's important to keep in mind, as this court stated in Bastianpour, that apostasy from Islam can result in punishment of death. And I would ask this court to approve the withholding of removal. Thank you.
Bronson.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Josh Braunstein on behalf of the Attorney General.
Mr. Braunstein, where is the Attorney General proposing to send Mr. Abuzzara back to? The order says Jordan.
That is correct, Your Honor. I imagine that would be their first choice. And this case, in a manner of speaking, begins and ends with Jordan, although the parties have fully litigated.
But he's not from Jordan. He's from this sort of odd political entity in our world today, you know, the occupied West Bank, which is under the authority of the Palestinian Authority, in a process that the United States has had a very great hand in fostering. So if he were sent back to the West Bank, wouldn't he be in, surely the Attorney General doesn't want to send someone back to his death.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. But I think that's getting a bit ahead of the first question. The first question is, could he be sent back to Jordan? And the answer is, there's nothing in the record that indicates that he could not. And he has never disputed that he is a Jordanian citizen. I would also add
But the practice of Jordan is to give Jordanian passports to Palestinians who live in the West Bank, because Israel won't give Israeli passports to them.
I think, Your Honor, to answer your question, I agree that that is the policy in some instances. I don't think that that is with respect to everyone. In other words, the first question is, would he have the right to return to Jordan? And he, if you look at the record, it's clear. He has spent lots of time in Jordan without any problem. He went to, he got his business degree there, spent 3 years studying in Jordan. His brother.
So that would be sending him back, though, to some place that's not his home. It'd be like saying to an American who was, you know, in Libya, and they're deporting the American, oh, we'll just send you back to Canada. It's a lot like the United States.
Even if that were true, that's not the proper calculus. He's a citizen of that country, and he's lived there. And
but
the
he
Attorney
was born
General
in Hebron, right?
There's no question that he was born in Israel.
He's a Palestinian.
Absolutely.
So he's born in Hebron. He's a Palestinian. He's raised in the West Bank. And, yes, he carries a Jordanian passport.
And, yes, he has lived in Jordan. And that's not a question that's really squarely before the court. I mean, the statute says that the Attorney General may remove a person to any country that if they designate a country, which Mr. Zarin did not in this case designate. And so the immigration judge designated Jordan. They have every authority under the statute to attempt to remove him first to Jordan. And so with respect to Jordan, we submit that there's absolutely no evidence that he faces any sort of harm there. Now, if the Attorney General cannot effect a removal to Jordan, then they would seek another place. And that is why the parties litigated fully the issue with respect to the West Bank. But I think the court should hold immediately, without any difficulty, that he hasn't even pursued. In fact, he has waived any challenge to removal to Jordan. And I would also note that there's lots of evidence in the record that he has family ties there. His brother at the time of the hearing was living in Jordan. He has lived in Jordan for over 3 years. His brother was attending school there. He said that he talked to him every week, I believe, and he referred to his brother who's living in Jordan. So I dispute the notion that one, it's even properly a question for this court to resolve, and two, that there is a serious question in the record as to whether he could go back there. So I would say the court can easily find that there's nothing preventing the Attorney General from removing him to Jordan if that's a possibility for the Attorney General. But then we do have this fully litigated situation with respect to the West Bank. And so I don't know that, and I think that my client would enjoy having the court take a look at that in the alternative, because if they can't remove him to Jordan, and since it's before the court and has been briefed, it would be appropriate for the court to, in the alternative, look at that. And
now,
with
there's troubling evidence in the record. One of the articles that was submitted reports that many converts have been threatened with death from the Palestinian authorities, and some have ended up dead, others beaten. That article cites another article by somebody named Justice Wiener, who recounts stories of people being killed and mutilated who are converts. I mean, there's very troubling evidence in this record that the immigration judge doesn't seem to have focused on in the through the perspective of the convert as opposed to the original Christian.
No, I think that's not exactly true. The immigration judge took pains to explain why he found the State Department reports more persuasive. And if you look at the record at 71, he goes through each of those documents that you're mentioning, Your Honor, and he says these are not the kind of documents that are specific enough to give to overcome the State Department reports. And this court has spoken to that very question, and that is, why wouldn't the State Department reports, in the absence of some highly credible expert evidence?
I'm not sure what he's looking for. He says what you said. I'm looking at page 13 of his opinion of August 9, 2004. But he just kind of says it. He doesn't tell you what it is he doesn't like about the reports, why these reports are any more or less detailed than the State Department report.
I think that if you look at those reports, you can see, first of all, there's no sourcing, Your Honor. These reports, if you look at the one, for instance, the first one, the one on record 307, first of all, it's unclear where this alleged murder took place, other than in the mountainous region of the Palestinian Authority area. This is not journalism. This is not some sort of an investigative report. This is somebody collecting secondhand information and then putting it out through what appears to be an evangelical Christian organization. I don't know what the Barnabas Fund is, but it talks about praying for these folks. So I imagine it has some sort of religious bent, which does not render it automatically unreliable. But it does refer to the place as the Holy Land rather than with specific references. So the immigration judge, if you look at the third paragraph, it says local Christians in this part of the Holy Land have been involved in supporting converts from a Muslim background. It doesn't say where it happened. The Palestinian Authority area exists not just in the West Bank, but also in the Gaza Strip.
Right.
And so if it happened in the Gaza Strip, which it very well may have, then that wouldn't have any bearing on this case at all. And so what's the immigration judge said these, and if you go through all these articles, there are questions about the temporal nature. When did these so-called things happen? Why were they reported to the police? None of that information is there.
But you agree, though, that that Hamas is a stricter enforcer of Islamic law than the old Palestinian Authority. Do you agree with that?
I could agree with that, Your Honor, except I don't know. Now, Hamas, the terrorist organization, or Hamas now the political party today, because I think that a lot has changed.
It might be a terrorist organization.
I think the law has changed, but that brings up a good point, I think, with respect to the situation as it existed in this record. There was a stipulation that the Israeli government was in control of that region at the time that this hearing took place. And Mr. Cecchini stipulated to it, and the immigration judge made that finding. And so it's not a question of whether Hamas was necessarily, which is not to avoid answering your question, Your Honor. I just don't think that in the end that's the appropriate question to ask here, because the question is, who is the government? Is there any risk that they will harm this gentleman by virtue of his having converted to Christianity?
But Mr. Bronstein, it seems to me that really raises, this is not the only case in which it's raised, a very serious question. I mean, if we were to agree that the BIA could, or the Attorney General could ship this guy back based on 3 or 4 year old information where he wouldn't have been killed then, but he is going to be killed now, that's a really troubling argument for the government to make.
It's not the argument we're making, Your Honor.
I want to know whether, given Hamas's participation in the governance of the Palestinian regions at this point, whether it's open to Mr. Abu Zahra to file a motion to reopen based on changed circumstances, or what his avenue for calling this to the attention of the authorities is.
Your Honor, that would be the appropriate remedy. But I will tell you, and acknowledging that the court's review is limited to this record, that's not our position, that there's not that he's stuck no matter how bad it is there. But I would note that I took a look at the latest 2006 reports on religious freedom from the State Department, and the answer is, just for the court's conscience, there is no change according to those. That it has not gotten worse for converts to Christianity. And again, I submit that had the circumstances changed in an unfavorable way, it would be incumbent upon him to file a motion to reopen. I don't think, under the circumstances of those reports as they exist today, I don't think that would aid him in this case. But that's, of course, not properly before the court.
I think we could almost take judicial notice of the fact that Hamas's election was a stunning victory for them. Nobody predicted that. And they're in, I think, it looks like they're in their ascendancy. And if that is true, the chances of severe persecution of somebody who rejects Islam for another religion would, the price of poker would really go up for that person.
I would think that if they, Your Honor, I agree that if there were evidence that apostate Christians in that region, if they were being harmed by virtue of that and they came to the United States, they could seek refugee status in the first instance or withholding of removal. But again, if that occurred, according to the State Department's 2006 report, which is outside the record in this case, I note, that's not happening. And so, but if it were, I don't think anyone in the government would say that you're stuck with what was happening 3 years ago, and I think that's the situation in any country of the world. Should France all of a sudden change, as a hypothetical, a very far-reaching hypothetical, I think somebody would be in the future permitted to seek refugee status and avoid being returned there. I have one further thing to say that I didn't get to at the beginning, but I noticed in order to be complete, that we filed a motion to dismiss in this case that the court is carrying with the briefs. I wanted to let the court know that our position is that this petition for review was filed prematurely.
Ask you about that, about the voluntary departure issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is the status of that? Has anything been going on with the IJ on that?
It's now been resolved.
Right.
It's been resolved,
and we stayed it, right? So isn't this all sort of water under the bridge?
I would say at this point we're not going to pursue it, but we aren't waiving either. I don't think it changes the nature of the lack of jurisdiction at the time. I don't think it ripens in that regard.
If he would not have filed when he did and waited for 6 months or so, and then there was a decision on voluntary departure, wouldn't you have said his appeal at that time was untimely?
You can, according to my client, the answer is no. That's the position of the government, that any time that the case is still open for any reason before the agency, that it's not a final order. And I know other courts have viewed that in somewhat different terms. Subject to any questions, that's all I have.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Have any time left over here? You got a minute, whatever else you want to add. We've heard a lot. Okay, thanks. The case was taken under advisement.